Mason. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks super fan. We've got another great show. This is going to be the last of our dedicated draft series leading up to the draft. So watch for a little bit later show on Friday of this week rather than Thursday so that we can get some reactions in for that. But for today, we've got our normal draft experts. Let's go ahead and start off with the man from Buffalo, Rob. How's it going?
I'm doing well, enjoying the sun starting to poke out here in Florida, so happy about that.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I've still got 12 more months of rain, this being the Pacific Northwest. Let's go ahead and throw it over to Chris, our Saints fan. What's up, Chris?
I'm doing great, guys. It's draft week. It's here. It's finally here. So yeah. let's make a bunch of wrong picks and get excited for Thursday.
Oh, I'm all for it. And, of course, we can't make picks without our very own Neil Kuiper Jr. Neil, all the way from Scotland. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Justin. Hey, Chris. Hey, Rob. Just to let you know, guys, that spring has sprung over here. However, we are expecting snow on Tuesday and Wednesday, so hopefully we'll be able to dig our way out of that for the draft on Thursday.
Isn't it amazing how words have totally different meanings in Scotland, like spring?
All right. What does it mean to you?
It doesn't mean snow.
No, definitely not.
This time last year in Ohio, we did have about 6 inches of snow, so it happens.
I'm very familiar with the late April, early May snowfall, so that's why I live in Florida.
All right, so on today's show, we're going to talk some news of the week. We're going to go into round two of our mock draft. Now, keep in mind, this is the mock draft from our draft experts here, not from the overall super fans. Then we're going to talk some busts and maybe have a little bit more at the end of that if there's time. We'll have to see, but let's start things off with the news. So right off the bat, I want to talk about Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp, Hall of Fame defensive lineman. Hall of Fame idiot as well. So the reason I bring it up this time is he just came out recently and said that he doesn't think that Myles Garrett is deserving of the number one pick, called him lazy. He said, and I'm quoting him, "I see a lazy kid that makes four plays a game. This is the number one guy? No, this ain't even close." I'll be honest, from every single draft board I've seen, every scouting report I've read, it sounds like he's number one, and there's a ton of space between him and number two. Who's crazy here? Is it me or Warren Sapp? Let's start with you, Chris.
How many hookers have you punched?
I'm going to wager fewer than Warren Sapp.
Okay, so I'm going to go with Warren Sapp here. I mean, look, this is, as far as I'm concerned, it's clearly somebody trying to stay relevant. This man has been fired from almost any media source that he's been affiliated with in the past, and it's one of those stupid, shocking things that we have to hear leading up to the draft. It's nonsense. There's not a single scout that will tell you who's better than Garrett, who should be the number one pick. Not one. There's not even a clear-cut number two in this draft, which has got to tell you something. There's a clear-cut number one, and then number two, you've got like seven players.
Yeah, so that's what I'm hearing too, but Neil, I know you watch about 30 hours of film per day. What's your take? Do you see a lazy player who's only good for four plays at a time?
Chris is absolutely right. It's Garrett and the rest, and there's a huge gap before you get to the rest. If he gives me four plays a game, Justin, and that's two sacks and two tackles for loss, I'll take his 32 sack season any day of the week. And I just come on, Warren Sapp, just say something positive for a change. He's always negative. That guy drives me nuts.
Yeah, Rob, are we unanimous on this one? Are we all saying that Warren Sapp is just full of BS?
Yeah, I don't know what cable access show you found these comments from, but no one cares. He's past his prime. It reminds me of like a wrestler from the 80s who says something crazy about a comeback, you know, just for relevancy, for no good reason. That's all this is. His opinion literally means nothing.
This is so absurd. Skip Bayless doesn't agree with him.
There you go.
I mean, it's absolutely that. And let's not forget that Warren Sapp this time in his draft process, the same thing was saying about him. He fell because of character issues and being lazy. So was his teammate, Simeon Rice. So take that for what it's worth. I mean, it's irritating.
Yeah, I've always kind of subscribed to the idea that you really can't get away with being lazy at the NFL level all that much, because the dude in front of you is a full-grown man and will absolutely obliterate you if you are not doing everything you can to survive out there. So I don't know. That it seems crazy to me. Moving on to character concerns, let's talk about Caleb Brantley. Reports are out that he is in trouble, speaking of violence against women, for punching a woman. Days before the draft, what is he thinking? Somebody help me out here.
We're literally asking these kids. We're literally asking them to not do drugs, to not drink and drive, and to not beat women for 90 days. And he was unable to do that. That's it. 90 days. We don't even care if you do it the rest of the year. 90 days. It's absolutely idiotic, and he should fall out of the draft for it.
The official position of the Next Fan Up podcast is we do not condone violence against women regardless of draft position. Anyway, okay, so let me ask you this, though. Does it change your opinion if, according to the police report, she hit him first? Does that matter to you at all, Rob?
Listen, he's 6'3", 307. That's not retaliation. That's not self-defense. That's retaliation. It's stupid. That's not self-defense.
She may have been 6'4 and 310.
Yeah.
Yeah, according to the police report, she was 120, so he was about three times her size. And again, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate, ask all sides. But Neil, can we agree that he's got to fall off of draft boards for this, right?
Well, absolutely. And I tell you something, Justin, if she was 5'8 and 120 pounds, taking on a guy at 6'3, 307, I would draft her, because that's the sort of fight I want in my players.
Oh yeah, she's basically Tyrann Mathieu.
Absolutely. No, let's be serious for a minute here, Justin. This is Chris is absolutely right. Come on, guys, just stay home, close the blinds, lock the door, and stay at home. Get drunk every day at home if you want. Just stay at home and turn your phone off. Violence against women, of course, it's absolutely abhorrent. Violence against anybody is abhorrent, especially when you're a big physical guy like that. I mean, you can do serious damage. I don't want him in my team, and he would certainly be off my board along with one or two others this year. And as we see, it's the same every year, isn't it? There's always two or three idiots. Take them off your board for just being stupid.
Yeah, agreed. My thought with that is kind of similar to my thought with people who get busted for drugs right before the draft. If your judgment is so bad that on this most important week of your life thus far, you can't even control it then I can't count on you for an entire career. And on top of that, I know we don't have time to get into it. I would love to at some point be able to do a deep dive on a show and talk about the issues of domestic violence in the NFL, because obviously it's not just this kid. It's something that happens a lot and is very, very serious. But, you know, I have draft experts, not sociology experts today. So we're going to move on before we get in trouble.
I mean, going back to your point there, Justin, you're absolutely right in terms of trusting these guys who can't control themselves for 90 days. You're about to make them all multimillionaires. And what's that going to do for guys who can't control themselves when they've got no money?
Yeah.
You know, one of the ways that you could nip this in the butt now is, you know, Tim Williams and Reuben Foster and these other players that have had issues with drugs and tested negative at the combine, they're already in the drug program in the NFL. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have an already suspension in place for Caleb Brantley.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very, very well said. Moving on down the list, Jay Howard was released by the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, just last year, he signed a contract extension, so this came as a bit of a surprise to me. I know that he ended up on the injured reserve last year. Talking to Nick, our Chiefs fan, he seems to think that there must be something more going on the side, either something between him and the coaching staff, or the injury is a lot worse than we potentially thought. They're not saving a ton of money with this release. Maybe up to $1.5 million per year if he's not picked up by anybody. Is anybody clamoring for Jay Howard on their team?
Not this late in the process. I mean, this is one of those things. Every team right now is going to wait and see how the draft falls before Jay Howard even gets mentioned. Especially, that's a $5 million cap hit Kansas City just took on to save $1.5 million. Nick is absolutely right. There's something else here. This injury is either career-threatening or his attitude is.
Well said. No team's going to touch this guy also until they find out what the story is behind the release.
Yeah, for sure. And then finally, let's talk about DeShone Kizer. I don't know if they measure confidence at the combine, but if they did, he probably would have set a new record. Here's a quarterback who we'll talk about during our mock draft, who I'm going to paraphrase, and I don't want to be subject to a claim of taking him out of context. So this was all part of a broader discussion about what he thinks his potential could be. But he effectively said he was Tom Brady mentally in Cam Newton's body. So, Rob, should we just go ahead and carve out a wing in the Pro Football Hall of Fame for him today? Is that why you have him at the top of all of your draft boards?
Oh man, why do you say something so silly? I have seen prior to this reports in scouting season things mentioned about him being a pretty cocky individual. I guess this kind of cements it. The quotes came out. He initially kind of denied it and said it was taken way out of context. But then, less than a day later, he decided to just own it. So, good for him. I think, as the kids say, a swag level on 100 or something. But, I mean, man, that's not going to do you any favors going into an NFL locker room and trying to command respect by saying just such silly remarks.
I think there's probably an excuse for him here, in the sense that these guys are poked and prodded now all the way through this process, and they're questioned by seasoned reporters and guys looking for a story, and they're pretty new to all of that. So you could maybe give him a little bit of a buy for that. The confidence thing, yeah, you want your guys to be confident, but he has to learn to deal with the media better. And maybe he needs to have a weekend with Warren Sapp, who will put him right.
Yeah, I would have said I prefer my quarterbacks to be confident but not delusional. But then my quarterback says he's got nanobubbles, so what do I know? All right, so moving on, and this is what I'm really excited about. We're going to get into round two of our mock draft. Now, this mock draft is done by our three draft experts that you have here, Chris, Neil, and Rob. So don't take these necessarily to be the opinions of that team's particular super fan. Now, what we did do here, though, is we did pay attention to our first-round mock drafts. So as you go through these guys, I'm just going to sort of bring up, who made what pick, and then tell us a little bit about the pick. And, in context of the players you took before, obviously if you just took a quarterback in round one, probably not taking one in round two. But I really want to get kind of your guys' sense for sort of using the draft to sort of complete the whole puzzle rather than just players in a vacuum. So if you guys are ready, let's start off right at the top. And we're going to start off with a guaranteed Hall of Famer. Chris, for the Cleveland Browns, you took DeShone Kizer, who, as we all know, is Tom Brady's brain in Cam Newton's body. So, of course, you had to make that pick, right?
Just to prove that even Cam Newton and Tom Brady would fail in Cleveland. I felt like I had to go quarterback with them. I felt like this was the pick that they would go. There's a lot of chatter about Trubisky. With round one, they did not go that route. They went Garrett and Allen as he fell. Look, if I'm a Cleveland fan, I made the pick and I wouldn't be happy with it. But this just seemed like the logical choice for them. And, I wish the kid the best, but we'll see what happens.
Well, and you also took Myles Garrett, who will get you 4 plays per game. And then who else did you take? Because Cleveland's got a couple first-round picks.
Jonathan Allen was the other first-round pick.
Yeah, and so, I mean, if this is one of those situations where I feel like this happens to Cleveland a lot, where, if all of these early picks actually hit, they could turn around really fast, but it just seems like they never do. I guess time will tell if you have the magic touch that Cleveland's been needing after all these years.
You know, it might take Cam Newton and Tom Brady's brain. It might take it.
Yep. And four great plays out of Myles Garrett. All right, Neil, you picked for the hated 49ers. There might be some editorializing on that on my part. And you gave them Evan Engram, the tight end from Ole Miss. Tell me about that pick.
Well, you look at the 49ers offense and you think, yeah, what have they got, actually? They're going to have Brian Hoyer at quarterback. He needs targets. They've got Carlos Hyde there at running back. But really, when it comes to the 49ers, I think they have a worse roster overall than Cleveland. So for them, it's just taking the best players available. As you guys know, I love Evan Engram. I wish he would have fallen to Washington. But the Ole Miss tight end, although I think tight end may be a slight misnomer for him, I think he might end up playing as much in the slot as he does at tight end. Very similar to Jordan Reed, who of course is a Pro Bowl tight end / slot receiver for Washington. And that goes together with the first round pick I gave them of Jamal Adams. John Lynch, big safety, of course, back in the day, taking a safety with his first draft choice. So give them Jamal Adams, the best player on the board in round one, and Evan Engram, the best player for me, at least on the board in the beginning of round two.
All right, up next we had Chris picking for Jacksonville. I apologize for butchering this in advance. You went with Obi Melanfonwu, safety out of Connecticut, to pair with their first-round pick, Leonard Fournette. So what's your plan for Jacksonville here?
You know, this pick, their big focus this offseason is to get tougher. And what better way to do that than to bring in a 6'4", 225-pound hard-hitting safety? The kid's an athletic freak. I don't think he's a corner. I see a lot of chatter about that. I do think he is best used as a in-the-box strong safety. But this is another athletic player to drop in the secondary with Jalen Ramsey, who you took last year. So, and then they also, I believe this offseason, they lost Jonathan Cyprian as well. So it would be a nice way to go in and even upgrade that position.
Yeah, I love that thought. You're making the team tougher, starting off by picking the toughest name to pronounce. Good move there. All right, up next we got Rob for the Bears. You went with Trey White, cornerback from LSU. Tell us about that.
I think it's easy for this. You know, their coach, you know, is a defensive coach. They got to build that defense up. You know, in the first round, we went Solomon Thomas, who I think, you know, could play that defensive end position well for them. I think the cornerbacks are still, like, the cornerbacks coming off right now are so strong. You know, Trey White could easily be a first-round pick. You know, he's an island corner. He's someone who, if he fulfills his potential, could, you know, be one of those, you know, cover the team's number one guy, you know, follow him along the field, and you feel pretty good about it.
All right, and then up next we turn it over to Neil, picking for the Rams. You grabbed the guard, Feeney, from Indiana. That's the only pick for the Rams since they gave away everything for Jared Goff. So, Neil, how are you going to rescue them?
Oh, I think they may well be beyond rescuing, Justin. I would say that if I was the Rams GM, I would be trying, like anything, to trade down at this point just to get some more picks, because I think they'll get a player as high a quality as Dan Feeney later in the second round and also in the third round. So try and trade down to get some picks, because they need lots on that team. I think the offensive line, that's what they need to protect Goff, and they've got to keep Goff upright this year. So give me Feeney, who is probably the second, well, he's certainly the second guard in this draft. He's pretty good. I think Chris is quite high on Dan Feeney. So, yeah, Feeney will plug a hole, but they could do with trading down, because like you say, Justin, they gave that first round pick, I think it was to Tennessee, wasn't it? So, is he the best player on the board right now? It's doubtful, but they need to keep Goff upright.
All right, Rob, you picked McDowell, the defensive tackle from Michigan, for the Chargers. What did you see in him that you liked here?
You know what I thought, you know, as far as a need for the Chargers, you know, their defense is going to be changing up a little bit. And I felt like for what was available, I actually kind of wanted, who I was planning on taking was Feeney. because I wanted to help improve that offensive line. But the defensive line prospects, once we get to this, you know, getting to where we're at right here, you know, I felt like McDowell was the one with the most upside. Now, he definitely has the most bust potential. But I think in the second round, you can feel good about maybe trying to swing for the fences a little bit. So I didn't mind maybe going out on a limb and trying to get McDowell to, you know, fit into that defense. And, you know, if it works out, he's going to be one of the top, you know, 15 players in this draft.
All right, Chris, now come around back to you. You were picking for the Jets. You went with Mixon, the running back from Oklahoma. What's your thought process here?
I mean, he's the best, arguably the best running back in the draft. You know, we all know the issues. We all know why he's fallen. But they have an aging running back in Matt Forte. Joe Mixon is somebody who can come in, replace below Powell as the third down back, keep Forte off the field, hopefully keep him fresh later in the season. And the Jets are no stranger to drafting character risk players. You know, it's not justifying what Mixon has done, but the Jets, if anybody, their PR team is ready for it. You know, they drafted Sheldon Richardson, they drafted Muhammad Wilkerson. They've drafted time and time again. They've shown they don't care, and they've drafted these players. So getting them in the second round, I thought the value was just too high.
All right, up next, picking for the Panthers, we had Neil. You went with, and again, I apologize for butchering the name in advance, Chidobe Awuzie, the cornerback from Colorado. Tell me about this pick.
Yeah, can I just go back and ask Chris if on reflection he would take a quarterback for the Jets in round one rather than, was it Hooker he took?
In round one?
Yeah.
No, because they already have a lot of players that aren't ready to start. I wouldn't take another one. I think the first-round quarterbacks this year all need a year or two to sit.
Well, he'll be sitting for the Jets, probably on his backside in the backfield. Anyway, Justin, Chidobe Awuzie, the cornerback from Colorado for the Panthers. I think the Panthers, they've got Bradbury, haven't they? He'll be the second-year cornerback, and they drafted one or two corners, of course, last year to help replace the guys as they lost. They lost Josh Norman to Washington, but they also lost, I think, one or two other players from that secondary last year. So just keep adding players to that secondary. He's a good corner who's risen in the draft boards over the last few weeks. And as we know, this is a super deep draft in corners. And I think we're going to be speaking about a number of corners in the second round. And for my sort of dynamic duo there, we've got Awuzie, and we have Dalvin Cook in the first round. Not the running back I really wanted for the Panthers, but he'll be fine there. I think he'll get a lot of the ball, certainly. So yeah, good pairing for Panthers there. I think that'll two starters for them.
All right, up next we've got Rob picking for the Bengals, and this one is kind of interesting to me. As somebody who doesn't follow college football that closely, there's a bunch of players whose names I knew, like Leonard Fournette, but Alvin Kamara is a name I hear a lot now that a lot of people really, really like it that I didn't hear too much about prior. So tell me about sending him to Tennessee, which is a team that seems to love his running backs.
I think, or that, well, the Bengals.
Sorry, from Tennessee.
No, that's all right. But I think the Bengals need a reset at the running back position. I think Jeremy Hill is approaching hot garbage status, to be completely honest with you. And I mean, he's 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and he'll randomly run one for 60 yards like once every 6 weeks. I think that, you know, in the first round, you know, they went Ross, the vertical threat. And I think he'd become very dangerous sitting across from AJ Green. I think that you put Kamara in that offense, give him the touches that you're giving Jeremy Hill with, you know, the other running back, the kid from North Carolina getting, you know, his catches and playing a little bit. I think that offense is super dangerous. I just think that Kamara, one of the top players left on my board. And to me, I think running back is still a position of need for the Bengals, even with the two guys they got, because one of the guys that they count on, I think, is not.
All right. Then we're up to the Saints next. And so this one, I believe, is Chris. You went with Kevin King from Washington, a school close to my own heart. So what did you like in this kid, and what did you like in this fit?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations that if I could go back and do it all over again, I would have. I really expected Trey White to fall. He did not. If I could go back, I took Patrick Holmes at number 32. I would take Trey White there and then take Curtis Samuel in at this 42 pick. King is a talented player. I mean, he's 6'3", good press man. It's just a huge, huge need for the Saints. So I had to go away from best player available and just take one of the few corners that are left. There was a pretty big run there at the end of the first round. So that's more need and could've, would've, should've than really excited about him, to be honest.
Perfect. Took my love for a UW player and turned it into a sea of sadness and regret. Awesome.
the standard response for Washington player, Washington fans, isn't it?
Oh, man.
Should just be right at home.
Top four. All right. Made the playoff. All right. all right. Up next, we had Neil picking for the Eagles, and you picked the most sure thing, least controversial player in this entire draft. The opinions of him are so unanimous, and that's, of course, Jabril Peppers.
Yeah, I can't believe Chris didn't take him for the Saints at pick 42, but at pick 43, the long night in the green room is finally over for Jabril Peppers. God, I hope he's not going to the draft. Is he going to the draft? Is he on the list of players? Because he could have a long night.
I don't think he is.
Good choice, Jabril. Another good choice from Jabril Peppers. I've got him going to the Eagles there, Justin, to pair up with Marlon Humphrey, who gave them in the first round. What's Peppers going to be? Who knows? But if he's going to bust, then let him bust on one of my NFC East rivals. That would be... That would be win-win for Washington. And if he's going to be a good player, then yeah, sure. Go be a good player and prove Chris wrong. At least he'll start off as a good return man. And that can be a bonus to a team. In the second round pick, you don't lose quite as much, do you, if he busts in the second round as you would do if you took him in the first round. So I think this is a good place for Peppers, both in terms of team fit and also in terms of... pick number 43 instead of pick number 12 or number 11 or whatever.
Let's be honest here. This is what happens when you let a Washington Redskins fan pick for the Philadelphia Eagles. He took the two players in this draft that have the worst ball skills possible, and Humphreys and Peppers.
Hey, have you seen Washington's quarterback? He does throw the odd pick.
This and you're just trying to get rid of it. This is completely biased, Neil.
I don't know. Peppers, Peppers could turn out to be a player. But he's definitely a 50-50 guy. Definitely.
I could lose weight and regrow my hair. It's not going to happen.
We are in perfect consensus here on this pick then. All right. Up next for the Bills, no surprise, we have Rob making the pick. You went with Gerard Davis from Florida. What about that player makes you want to take him to home to the Bills, other than the fact that he plays next to your actual home in Florida?
I like him. I think with the defense that they're going to run, you know, Sean McDermott was the defensive coordinator in Carolina. And that defense was really built, you know, obviously they had Kuechly, you know, but they had other guys throughout the years that he was there as well. You know, linebacker was, you know, really a point of emphasis for the team. And I expect that to kind of continue with the Bills. Jared Davis was one of the higher guys. I think he was the second highest guy I had on my board. And I think linebacker is definitely a position of need for the Bills. You know, they have two decent middle linebackers. Unfortunately, they're only going to start one, you know, so that's a problem. Their outside linebackers are terrible. So Jared Davis could fit into one of those roles. He could start. A couple bonus points because changing it up, usually the Bills are good to draft a Williams or two every year. Now, with my mock draft, if they were to follow through with that, they'd go Davis and Davis because I took Corey Davis in the first round to be kind of that wide receiver to go on the other side of Sammy Watkins, and be the number one most of the time probably because Sammy Watkins is always injured.
A question for you on Davis. Davis is somebody who's skyrocketing up the draft board, supposedly, you know, from what we're hearing. Would you be happy with him as a first-round pick?
No.
Okay.
No, I think he's good. I don't think he's that good. I'll be honest. You're starting to see, at least, you know, from Bills, you know, the local reporters and stuff, you're starting to see, unfortunately, your boy, Hassan Reddick, get mentioned a little bit more the closer we get. To the point where it wouldn't really shock me. I wouldn't be sad about it because I think he's a great player. But that's the only one at that position. I wouldn't want to see Jared Davis, you know, go at number 10. Like, if they traded down into the 20s and took him, great. But not at 10.
It's interesting how how some linebackers are starting to go up the boards. A few months ago, we were saying, wow, there's just no linebackers in this draft. And now we've got Reddick who's shooting up the boards. You've got Davis. You've got Bowser as well. So, I don't know, is that just workouts, personal workouts that's driving these guys up the boards?
Well, Davis, everybody knew he was an incredibly talented kid. He was just injured a lot.
Yeah, injuries are the big thing with him.
All right, keeping with that linebacker theme, though, let's move on to the Cardinals. I believe in this one we're up to you, Chris, making the pick, and you went with Tyus Bowser, linebacker from Houston. So what about him do you like? Other than the fact that I think he has a surgical plate in his face now.
The kid's just super talented. He's a phenomenal edge rusher, great bend, and he also gives you coverage ability, which is something that you don't see a lot of linebackers in the 3-4 formation that the Cardinals run. I understand that they already have Jones locked up, and they have, the kid from Missouri, Cooper. Bowser's a perfect number 3. And we've reached the point with base defenses and when we're threading the nickels that you don't just need 2 pass rushers, you need a 3rd one to come off the bench. You know, the Broncos had a lot of success with it with Shane Ray coming in and it's giving DeMarcus Ware a breather and Von Miller. I think that's what Bowser is. I think Bowser's going to be their version of Shane Ray. Could come in, log solid minutes, and then when Cooper's contract's up, they can go through and they consider, you know, consider even letting him go because they've already got his replacement in house. That's Golden, not Cooper. I'm sorry, Marcus Golden.
All right, up next we got Neil. You were picking for the Colts. You went with a player that I took in one of our mock drafts for my Seahawks. That's Jordan Willis. Sounds like you like him as much as I do. So what do you see in this player?
I see a player who may struggle to find an absolute set position in the NFL, but what he brings for the Colts is going to be some pass rush. And we know that the Colts haven't had a real pass rush since the heady days of Bjorn Werner. So give them Willis there on the edge, the Kansas State guy. He's a big player. He was 6'4", 6'5", 255. Maybe he can bulk up and play as a defensive end, or maybe he'll be an outside linebacker. But certainly, from day one, he'll give them a bit of extra pass rush. When you think of the Colts, when I think of the Colts, I think of pass rush and I think of offensive line. And the first round, of course, we gave them Garrett Bowles, the tackle. Second round, let's give them the edge rusher. And I think the Colts would be fairly happy with that moving forward. And I think it adds to what's been a pretty good offseason for the Colts in terms of the free agent signings they've made. So yeah, a bit of an edge rush there for the Colts in round 2.
All right, up next we've got Rob picking for the Ravens. You went with Jackson, the cornerback from USC. There's a lot of cornerbacks in this draft class.
There are, but there's a lot. That's the thing. There's a lot of good cornerbacks in this draft class. For me, you know, just looking at the depth chart for, you know, Baltimore, I felt like cornerback could be, you know, it's definitely one of their bigger needs. I know they signed Brandon Carr, but I think he was only to I could be wrong. I think he was only to a 1-year deal. So that's just a stopgap. Adoree Jackson is someone who could definitely fit in, play right away, good minutes. Teams are playing 3-4 cornerbacks on the regular now. So, you know, it's become more of a priority position to, you know, get the numbers there. And I think by 2018, you know, he's the starter opposite Jimmy Smith. And, they like to go best player on the board anyway. And I think Adoree was one of, if not the top guy I had on the board at that point. And then in the first round, you know, we went Mike Williams with them, which, you know, was definitely a receiver need as well. So I feel like the Ravens kind of covered, in our draft at least, covered 2 needs straight away.
Now, not to redirect us, but is it just me or is there always a Mike Williams wide receiver drafted pretty high who always turns out to not be that great of a player. Is that just like a NFL draft tradition at this point?
I can think of two Mike Williams busts in the draft. One was the kid from Syracuse who went to Tampa. Well, he had one good year. But I know the Bills drafted with the 4th overall pick the year Joey Harrington was the number 3 pick to Detroit. They took Mike Williams out of Texas to be their left tackle, and he was a special type of terrible.
Well, there was USC Mike Williams as well.
Oh, him too? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just an NFL tradition. All right.
If you want your baby to be a wide receiver, don't name him Mike Williams.
Mike Williams, guaranteed. All right, Chris. While we're on the subject of you, let's talk about Taylor Moten, guard. He was your pick for the Vikings.
Yeah, you know, this is a team that doesn't have their first round pick thanks to the Sam Bradford trade. And when you have Sam Bradford as a quarterback, you need two things: you need a great offensive line, and you need to draft his replacement. So that's what we started off with. We tried to beef up that offensive lineup a little bit. They also did sign Lamar Miller. Looks like they're going to kind of go back and make the rushing attack be a priority for him. Moten's a super talented, played right tackle in college. I think he's going to play right guard in the pros, but he does give you that versatility of being able to kick out. Really powerful, really athletic. I love the kid. I think if he would have attended a USC or a bigger school than Western Michigan, I think he'd be a top 20 pick.
All right. Up next, we have Neil. You're picking for your own Washington team, and you went with Tano Passanio. He is a defensive tackle from Villanova. Why don't you tell us about this pick?
Well, another one of my favorites from this upcoming draft class. Tano, 6'7", 295 pounds. He'll probably play the defensive end position in our 3-4 front, the 5 technique. And yeah, you watch him for Villanova, and I know he's playing against a lower talent pool there when he's playing for Villanova. But the guy was an absolute monster. He was ripping guys' heads off in his college career. He's raw, but he is physically what a specimen. And yeah, let's take a flyer on Tano. We could have taken Montrevious Adams or Dalvin Tomlinson, but I just like this guy's his quickness off the snap and his strength and power. And that's another lineman for Washington. Just keep hammering it away. We've got Forrest Lamp, guard in the first round, to play left guard for us. And now we add a young defensive lineman to what is quite possibly the worst defensive line in football. So, yeah, he's guaranteed snaps there.
Here's the thing that I like about him, just reading about him real quick, is, you know, you mentioned this physical specimen tearing the heads off of people. He's also the son of a chemical scientist and economist. He was an accounting and finance double major who already had an internship lined up at Prince Waterhouse Coppers. He's not a dummy. Now, that probably doesn't translate that much onto the football field, but you just have to feel like, you know, here's a guy who's probably less likely to make some major mistakes with his life.
Whoa, Justin, you're just guaranteeing the guy's going to be arrested tomorrow morning.
Oh, man. I'm not going to make any of the jokes that are occurring to me right now because they will get me in trouble. So instead, we're going to move on to the Buccaneers. Where my good buddy Rob went with Marcus May, safety from Florida, who is a player I like quite a bit. Why don't you tell us about him?
I think that, you know, the Buccaneers, they've done a real good job. If you look at where their roster was a couple years ago, kind of rebuilding it and, you know, making it a pretty strong team, could be a dark horse playoff team this year. For them, I think safety, I don't really care for any of their safeties, quite frankly. Marcus May was one of the top guys on the board. He's a guy who I think fits into that strong safety role, you know, and can play it well. You know, he can hit, he can get into coverage a little bit. You know, he's a playmaker. I think he's a great fit. If this were to somehow stick, I love their first round pick. They ended up with Christian McCaffrey. That would give them another added fun little dimension on offense. Man, if McCaffrey was their running back with what their offense is, that would be, it'd be so sick. That would be a fun offense to watch.
But I think May is just, you know, fits a need and one of the highest guys left on the board at this point. You know, good pick for the Buccaneers.
Yeah, I just want to ask you about sort of strong safeties. You know, he's a guy, he could probably play both, but he definitely seems to be more of the strong safety type. It seems like just a few years ago that they were a dying breed that would fall in the draft, and now we've already talked about several going in these first couple of rounds. Why do you think that is?
I think, you know, with him, I think it's almost like a new breed of strong safety. I don't, you know, it's not like the just, you know, hard hitting. For some reason, the name Chuck Cecil is popping into my head, and I don't know why. You know, like those just hard hitting and can't do anything else. You know, you need to be able to do more, which is, you know, kind of changes it a little bit. I think Marcus May can do, you know, more than, you know, he's not like just a hitter. You know, he can, you know, make, you know, he's shown that he can make plays, you know, when the ball is in the air. Now, granted, I know his, you know, his last year in Florida, I think he was credited with 10 touchdowns given up. So something needs to change a little bit, whether how he's used or something else. But, you know, he is a playmaker, whether it's hitting or, you know, potentially when the ball's in the air. I think it's just the way the position feud might be a little different, you know, than it was, you know, as close as 5 years ago.
Go ahead, Neil.
I think, Justin, make a note in your book there, because I think there's a discussion to be had on a future podcast about the role of the safeties and also the linebackers in relation to the enhanced use of tight ends in the passing game in the NFL. I think safety, especially, is one position that's changing considerably because of these kind of, well, we talked about Evan Engram and Jordan Reed and Travis Kelce, these big guys who are also excellent route runners, and I think that's changing the positions of safety. And maybe we could probably even say that the calling them strong safety and free safety anymore may well be a bit of a misnomer. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. And I was just going to add to that, you know, when years ago when we were children, your strong safety was typically, you know, a smaller, faster linebacker is the player that they would switch to strong safety. Now it's a free safety who's a little bit slower, you know, somebody who's not going to be able to do that single high. And you're absolutely right, Neil. You know, the New England Patriots spent more money on safeties and tight ends than any other team in the NFL last year. There is a seismic shift on how teams are being built, and you're seeing a lot of three safety sets. You're seeing, you know, it's interesting to watch it evolve, but I think you're going to see a lot of safeties drafted high this year because there's a lot of good ones. And I think you're going to see a lot of corners making that switch from corner to safety. Your Desmond Kings, your Cameron Suttons. It's going to be interesting to see how these players pan out.
All right. Yeah, that's a really interesting conversation. We could probably make an entire show out of it. Maybe we will at some point. Up next, though, Chris, I believe you were picking for the Broncos. Hopefully I haven't lost track of the order. You went with the running back Marlon Mack from South Florida. Here's a player I will be honest, I don't know much about. So who is he?
Personal opinion, think Alvin Kamara, but better. I think he's going to offer a lot of the same things. I'm with you. I'm not entirely sure of how this hype train was created with Alvin Kamara. He was a backup running back. Marlon Mack is somebody who's been able to shoulder the load. The Broncos, and I still think the Broncos, if they get the opportunity, are going to pull the trigger on Christian McCaffrey in the first round. But they're going to be looking for an electric third down running back, somebody who can help relieve the pressure of whoever's starting at quarterback for him, somebody who can take a short pass and take it a long way. And Marlon Mack gives that to you. Incredible speed, incredible balance. He's good after first contact. Had a bit of a fumbling issue, but it seems to be more fundamental than, you know, smaller hands. So, no, I think Marlon Mack is somebody. I wouldn't be surprised if he's drafted before Kamara. He's catching a lot of steam currently.
That would be something to keep an eye on. All right, up next we had Neil picking for the Browns. You went with the tackle Antonio Garcia. So who is Antonio Garcia? What you're thinking of here for the Browns long term?
Okay, this is the Browns' fourth pick. They've had Garrett, Allen, and of course the greatest quarterback of all time at the start of the second round. Garcia for me is he's a left tackle. He's got great athleticism, great feet, but he's very light. In fact, he's too light. I think he's currently around about the 285-pound mark on a 6'5 or 6'6 frame, and that's probably not going to cut it in the NFL. But the Browns here get a chance to develop the replacement for Joe Thomas. I presume Joe will play at least one more season for Cleveland, possibly a couple, by which time Garcia should be ready to come in and step in at left tackle. And I think here, just a good value, pick, somebody to develop for Garcia from Troy. So yeah, I think that's a fairly solid pick. He's just not ready to start, I don't think.
All right, and then up next after that, we move on to the Lions, I believe. That would be Rob's pick. So Rob, you went with Tankersley, another cornerback from Clemson. Tell me about him.
This is another in a long line of good cornerbacks that are in this draft. With the Lions, we went Takaris McKinley first, you know, kind of get that rush out there. But I think that, you know, Tankersley, I feel like, you know, obviously they have Darius Slay, you know, but opposite him, I think it's still a need. So Tankersley, I think, kind of fills that role. I think as we're getting to the mid to the latter stages of the second round, I think someone of his talent, I think at this point, is a value. He could play man. He can also play zone really well. I think, honestly, since we're talking to you, I think Tankersley would be a perfect fit for a team like Seattle, you know, that does that cover three, you know, but he, you know, he can kind of do both. So I think he'd be, you know, he's a versatile cornerback, and I think that he'd be a good fit here.
All right, up next we had Chris. Chris, you were making the pick for the Dolphins. You went with Curtis Samuel, wide receiver. Here's a team that could definitely probably use a couple wide receivers. So what was it about Samuel that you liked here?
You know, I'm going to keep this short because I think we've dedicated an entire podcast to my love of Curtis Samuel. He can do it all. He's an electric returner, slot receiver, ran a 4.31 at the combine, and also is dynamic out of the backfield on reverses, on pitches, and just as a stand-up running back, not something you want to do a lot with him, but you know, it's just something that adding him with the talent they have at running back already, you know, they have Landry Jones, they have Kenny Stills. We'll see what Parker turns into. But adding another piece to that offense, another home run hitter, could really start to put defenses on their heels. And with Tannehill, we're kind of reaching that make or break. You know, we need to start seeing some points go on the board. That's how you do it. You get somebody he's like a Percy Harvin without the character risk. Absolutely love the kid. Would love to see him in New Orleans, but you know, at this point, you gotta let the dream go. He's not gonna make it to the third. Had to give him to Miami.
All right, up next, Neil, you were picking for the Giants. You went with Davis Webb, quarterback. Are you planning on him taking over once Eli is in prison?
Yeah, possibly not as soon as that, but certainly the Giants. First round, there really wasn't a quarterback there for them at that position. So, yeah, we gave them Derek Barnett, a bit of an edge rusher. Very typical Giants pick. And second round here, Davis Webb. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Davis Webb, but I think right now he's probably the highest rated quarterback that's left on the board. Although I'd always take Nathan Peterman, but I don't think the Giants will. And Davis Webb, yeah, give him a year or two to settle into that New York atmosphere and that New York team. Let's see what he can do. Big, strong-armed guy. But, yeah, I'm not a great fan, but I think the Giants will look to quarterback come pick 55.
All right, and to the surprise of nobody, Neil picks a player, says, I don't like this guy. You're going on my division rival.
Send him to the Giants.
Yep, I can.
You were picking for the Raiders. You went with McMillan, the linebacker from OSU. Who is this guy?
Raekwon the Chef. He is a middle linebacker. I think that, you know, I looked at the depth chart on the Raiders, and their middle linebackers are, you know, he's a definite upgrade to what they have at the position. You know, he's real strong with angles. He could get there quicker than the pulling guard can, you know, in plays of that nature. I think he's a great value, you know, late in the second round. Middle linebacker is obviously not a sexy pick per se, you know, given how often teams are, you know, playing in sub packages now. But, you know, I think he's a, you know, rock solid player, position in need for the Raiders.
And, you know, in the first round, the Raiders got Joku to play a tight end. Man, that would be some fun two tight end sets to watch with him and Cook. And then you got the two receivers outside. Oh, it'd be fun.
All right. Up next, we had Chris picking for the Texans. You went with Fabian Moreau. What is this, cornerback number 10 we've taken in these first two rounds? Are we still getting good corners this late?
You know, to give a little tease here, believe it or not, this pick starts another run. There's just so many good corners. It's insane. But Fabian Moreau, I know he's got the pec injury. Doesn't scare me away from him. Super talented kid. His asset is his speed. And look, I mean, the Texans just lost AJ Boye. Jonathan Joseph, we say it every year, he's not getting any younger. So it's time to start investing high picks to keep it going. Because, I mean, their defense is why they're in the playoffs. If they start to step down on that and expect Tom Savage to pick up the slack, it's never going to happen.
All right, up next, picking for my Seattle Seahawks, we have Neil. Now, Neil, before we get started, look at me. Eye contact right here.
Okay.
I am not in your division. Please do not give me a punter. Okay? All right, who is your pick? Looks like you went with a man after my own heart, Jones, the cornerback from Washington.
Torn Achilles tendon, Sidney Jones.
No! Neil, how could you?
Well, it was either that or Colin Holber, the highest-rated long snapper in this draft, but I went with Sidney Jones. First of all, to say, obviously, the first-round pick was Ryan Ramczyk. Now, he's an offensive lineman, Justin. And off air, I can explain to you what an offensive lineman is, since you don't actually have any of those currently in Seattle. But you got here Sidney Jones, second round. Okay, yes, he's got the injury. But from everything we hear, he will be back. It shouldn't affect him long term. And that's what the Seattle coaches will be thinking. Because if this guy turns out to be a player for you in 2018, you probably got the number one cornerback from this ultra super deep draft.
All right, I'm gonna give you a pass. I still think I don't quite trust you.
He's got great size, Justin. He's just over 6 foot, almost 200 pounds. Just what you like there in Seattle. So yeah, this guy's gonna be.
I'll extend his crutches all the way. All right, up next, Rob. You were picking for the Chiefs. You went with Josh Jones, the safety from North Carolina. So what's the thought process here?
Thought process with this one is more along the lines of, it might be a little bit of a luxury pick because obviously they have Eric Berry there, but you know, you need someone, you know, to play alongside him. And Josh Jones just has tons of range. I think it would be, it's a little bit of a luxury. I think he's one of the highest at the time, time of the pick, he was, I believe, the highest guy on my board. Josh Jones, I think, could come in, start right away. I think they re-signed Sorensen to play alongside Berry. But even if, teams are playing three safeties pretty frequently, and I don't think that, I think Josh Jones could go and definitely fill, that role, if not starting. I think he would start with them. In the first round, we went to Deshaun Watson, giving him the quarterback of the future. The Chiefs have done a really good job drafting the past couple of years, kind of built, filling their holes. So, a team like that, you can go, best available, and just, reap the rewards.
All right. And all right. This new run on cornerbacks that we started, Chris, you went with Jordan Lewis, a cornerback from Michigan. You were picking for the Cowboys. And I certainly feel like they could use some cornerbacks. So tell us about this player.
Jordan Lewis, and I've been on the record for saying this, I think he has the highest floor out of any corner in this draft. The reason he's fallen as far as he has, he's only 5'9". He ran in the 4.5s. But if you watch this kid play, he's always in the hip pocket of the receiver. Watch the... I know there's fear of how he'll match up against taller receivers. Watch the Wisconsin tape. And watch how that game ends. It's absolutely incredible one-handed interception over top of the receiver who just got his head around to start looking for the ball. Absolutely amazingly talented kid. Has some issues. He's currently another one of the, he's a member of the Warren Sapp Club, unfortunately. And he's He's fighting that in court currently. But the Cowboys have never really seemed to care about that. Team him up with Conley, the OSU corner from the first round, and this defense that's a weakness might actually start to becoming a strength here very shortly.
All right, up next, Neil, you were picking for the Panthers. You went with Deion Dawkins, the guard from Temple, which seems like a very, very logical choice. So how did that happen?
Well, logical for the Panthers, and let's hope it's logical for the Packers, too. Green Bay, they lost, what, J.C. Tretter, they've lost Sitton, they've lost Lang, all those inside interior guys. They need an infusion of youth there, and I think Dawkins, he's the next best offensive lineman who's left there on the board. So we'll give him Deion Dawkins from Temple to go with T.J. Watt, the pass rusher in the first round. And that's the two areas of need, I think, for Green Bay, isn't it? Interior offensive line and pass rusher. There's no running back really here to take so in the second round. So yeah, Dawkins, I think, is a solid choice. Be a good, solid player for them.
All right, up next, Rob, you were making the choice. You were picking for the Steelers. You went with Rasul Douglas, the cornerback from West Virginia. So I asked this question, I feel like 10 cornerbacks ago, but are we still getting good corners this late in the second round?
Yeah, I think we're still getting really good cornerbacks, you know, this late. I mean, cornerback is a need for the Steelers. I think we hit their biggest need in the first round with Harris, the kid from Missouri. I think Rasul Douglas, I think, is a super intriguing prospect. I mean, he's a big kid. He's 6'2", you know, 210 pounds. He had a decent amount of interceptions while at West Virginia, too. He plays that zone defense that, you know, Pittsburgh will run their cornerbacks in zone a little bit. He's going to fit in well there. I think he can come in. You know, their starters last year, one of them was a guy that the Buffalo Bills released. So if that tells you anything about their cornerback. So I think Rasul Douglas could come in and could be a starter, you know, maybe right out the gate. He's not the fastest kid in the world. I think he ran a 4.6 at the combine, but he's a tall kid. He's angular. And, you know, he can, for a cornerback, he can actually catch the ball, which makes him at least, you know, a little intriguing.
Now up next, Chris, you were picking for the Falcons, and you went with a player who to me is really, really interesting in Tim Williams from Alabama. What are your thoughts on him as a pro prospect?
Well, I mean, if I'm being honest, I hate the player and I hate the Falcons, so it seemed like a perfect fit. If I've learned anything from Neil, this is how we do it.
Yep.
I think Tim Williams definitely has his issues, but pass rush, they need somebody to team up with Vic Beasley. Beasley really busted out last year. Tons of production, tons of potential to even get better, which is scary. To give him somebody like Tim Williams to rush opposite, to come in and kind of also keep him fresh, because in that Super Bowl, Beasley disappeared. So to have those fresh legs coming off, It kind of felt like the perfect fit.
Yeah. I took him for the Seahawks in one of our mock drafts as well. And, you know, to me, he seems like a guy who physically he's so fast, so explosive. But, just from what I've been reading about him is, you know, he struggles with, like, even his incredibly simple job at Alabama. I just don't know how that works at the pro level. So we'll see. The Steelers could be a good landing spot for him because there's some wisdom there on the defense he can pull from. But let's move on to the last pick of the first round. In this case, it's going to be the Panthers. I believe, Neil, you're up for this pick. Am I right on that one?
Yes, you are, Justin. You're spot on. The Panthers have this pick, obviously, from a trade with New England, and they're going to take Chris Wormley, defensive tackle from Michigan. So far, the Panthers have had Dalvin Cook and Awuzie, our cornerback. And here they're going to just do what the Panthers often do, is just stockpile defensive tackles. Last year, they got a defensive tackle, I think it was Vernon Butler last year. And this year, Chris Wormley replaced the guy Ely, who went off to New England. So, yeah, just keep stockpiling those defensive linemen.
All right, well, that's going to be it for our round two mock draft. Guys, I really appreciate you going through and doing this. Hopefully, if you've been listening for all of these, and you are a draft expert, you're nodding your head along, or if you're more like me and honestly, you don't know the draft that well, you learned a whole heck of a lot about these players so that you can pretend you know what you're talking about once you hit draft day. Let's talk a little bit, though, about draft busts. You know, you hear this come up quite a bit, players who, you know, we usually define it as a player who comes in with high expectations, who in the end ends up not panning out, in some cases not even contributing a thing in the NFL. Typically, the size of the bust, I think, usually correlates to how high they're picked or how high they're regarded. So, you know, a great example would be Jamarcus Russell, you know, number one overall draft pick out of the league within a couple of years. So, you know, what I'm not talking about is the players who you take in the sixth round, take a flyer on, and for whatever reason, they don't pan out. So what I would like to do is I'd like to just go around my panel of draft experts and ask each one of you to pick one or two players that you want to kind of highlight as bust potential. And so that's what I'm looking for is, you know, the player that you think is the most regarded, that you think is the most likely to contribute the least. So we'll go ahead and just start with you, Chris. Who do you think has bust written all over him?
You know, it's gonna seem like I'm trying to be funny when I say this, but I honestly mean this. If Cleveland takes a quarterback in the first round, that's my pick. We've said it ad nauseum here. All these kids need a chance to be on the bench and to learn. If not that, if I had to pick a player and just go with one of them, I'd go to Sean Kizer. I think the maturity is really starting to show with him. And if you watch the tape, the physical attributes are there, but he holds onto the ball far too long. It looks like he's slow to react. He's slow to read. And he's hitting the receivers very late in the route. And if you're doing that for Notre Dame, that's not going to get better when you're playing against a Ravens or a Steelers defense. So, or any NFL defense for that matter. So I guess I would go with DeShone Kizer or any Cleveland quarterback in the first round.
All right, Neil, same question to you. I know that you have a couple of players here who you think are very likely to bust. So who were the real big capital B busts that you see?
The one for me would be, and you know, it's something, Justin, it's not his fault, but it would be Solomon Thomas, the defensive end or whatever he is from Stanford. When I watch his tape, and I've watched quite a bit of it, okay, he had an outstanding Sun Bowl against NC State, but in that game, you can see what he does. He's a player who just kind of, it's just typical college nonsense where guys are just standing up and rushing, and there's no real NFL pattern to the way they're lining up. It's a totally different game. In the NFL, this guy is going to be, well, he's 6'3". He's about 275 pounds when he's soaking wet. And I just don't see where he's going to play. Yeah, he looks good in some games where he uses his speed and his power. But he's going to be coming up against guys who are 6'3", 6'4", and all over 300 pounds in the NFL. This guy is going to get crushed as a 3 technique and a 4-3 defense. He can't play as a 5 technique. He can't play as an outside linebacker because he's not fast enough. And I could go on all night, but Solomon Thomas, I think he's going to be a bust, which guarantees he's going to have a Hall of Fame career. The second guy, Justin, I would give to you would be Malik Hooker, the Ohio State safety. I'm worried about, 1 year's production and the various injuries that he's had. He had 1 year where he was out injured the whole season. He looks fantastic. I mean, when he's playing, he looks great. But I'm not keen on the 1 year production and the fact that he's not a huge fan of tackling, which I always thought was quite important in the NFL.
All right, Rob, and finally, who would you not want your team to touch with a 10-foot pole?
Well, I wouldn't say touch with a 10-foot pole, but Neil, you just took my guy.
Solomon Thomas. Hey.
No, you took the hooker. You took the hooker. That was my guy. I think that as far as early picks, big potential to bust, I think he's a pretty logical choice. He's got, you know, he only has 1 year of real experience.
you know, and when you look at his gameplay, he's very instinctive against the pass, but, you know, definitely not so against the run. You know, his angles are kind of weak. He'll duck his head and go super low when he tackles. He missed 17 tackles last season, you know, when he played. So it's an issue. And I think, you know, NFL teams, as they get more tape on him, you know, it could become a much bigger issue. That being said, I like him. I mean, I took him as, you know, with the 10th pick, he fell to number 10. I took him in our super fan mock draft. That being said, if you're looking for bust potential, I think he's right up there, you know, with the rest of them. You know, he's higher than most.
Well, it just confirms what I've always thought, which is Rob has a bit of an issue with hookers.
Rob does have a bit of an issue with
hookers. Yeah.
Especially when they're dressed as maids.
I did live in Las Vegas for a while.
And that'll do it for today's show.
And go ahead and put the kibosh on wherever that conversation is going before.
Rob, would you add John Ross in as a potential bust guy who's probably going to go quite high?
It's a worry with John Ross. I mean, and I think we've all kind of seen the reports coming out recently. He's apparently made of glass with shoelace tendons. You know, four major injuries. That's a worry. That's definitely a worry. I don't think though he's going to be taken in the first round anymore. So I don't think, you know, the bust label that we're talking about necessarily applies to him, because I think he's going to go somewhere in the second round. I can't picture later, but he could go later, could he, Neil? No, he's got to go in the second, right?
When you got guys who've got such speed, that gets a lot of points in the NFL, doesn't it? That sort of speed.
Throw one name. I know Justin's ready to kick us off here, but one name I want to float out there, and I'm just curious. Quick response from you. Christian McCaffrey. Do you feel the hype's gone too high? It just being is feeling far too similar to Reggie Bush. And if this kid doesn't come out there and average 2,000 yards a season, he's going to be labeled as a bust. And if he goes to Carolina, we is that possible?
I saw a report today that someone said that McCaffrey does not get past 8.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going, he won't be available for Cincy. He's going 8 or earlier. And that's hallowed ground. That's a high pick for a running back in this day and age. So, you know, he's got to bring the goods. I don't think he's as good as that pick, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong about a lot of picks. So
There was a story that he was given a draft promise by a team that if you're still there at like 10 or something, or 8, somewhere in the teens, top 10.
His teens. It was 14, I think. 14 or 16.
Yeah. There you go. That was a draft promise. And you never really hear about that, do you?
In the NBA, you do. Not in the NFL.
Yeah. But I think McCaffrey will be good on the right team who throws the ball a lot and doesn't run it massively.
Not Carolina,
exactly.
All right, and with that, before any of you pull another thread and get us going down another rabbit hole, I'm going to put a stop to this madness.
But Justin, this is draft week. This is quite honestly, this is probably my favorite week of the NFL season. I could go on all night.
I cannot wait for this upcoming weekend. You know, this is one of those, you get your popcorn out, you put your feet up for 8 hours on a Saturday and a Sunday, and you just watch. And if you can do that, I mean, this to me is one of the most fun times of the NFL, regardless of what team you root for, because everybody's involved, and everybody, you know, you feel like you have potential to get better. And so, yeah, I love this time of year.
32 Super Bowl champions will be created on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
31.
I know a lot of Browns fans. They're wrong, but every team is, you're allowed to be optimistic no matter who you're a fan of going into Sunday morning. It's a magical time.
So we will have lots of draft content. That's one of the things I'm excited about, is because we have all of our super fans to pull from. We'll have reactions from everybody regarding the draft. I mentioned it at the top of the show. You may see the show hit on Friday rather than Thursday. And once we've had a chance to kind of get into it a little bit, there's going to be trades, I'm sure. It's going to be big moves. There's going to be surprises. There's going to be at least a couple people who never should have gone to the green room who have that awkward camera on them. So there is a lot. Please make sure that you are watching the draft. And please make sure that you are listening, sharing, liking, letting people know about this show. Neil, if people wanted to get your opinions, where could we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at NeilSalmon71. And I'm all ears.
And Rob, if we wanted your draft expertise, where would we find you?
You would find it at Buffalo_Sauced on Twitter.
And what about you, Chris?
I'm at That Patron Saint on Twitter. And this will be fun. Hit me up this week and tell. I want to know what your draft process is. What is it? What is your routine for draft? Is there a special meal that you make? Do you just let your personal hygiene take a trip to Tahiti? I want to hear it. The funniest ones will be retweeted and shared. Let's see how weird you guys can get on this one.
I love that Cleveland idea, Marty. What I can contribute.
Cleveland will be having a large helping of humble pie. That's what they do most draft days.
Always experiencing April's Fools in the end of April.
And you can find me at Koreis, that's at Koreis. You can find the show at NFU Podcast. Email us, nextmanup@gmail.com. If you have questions, if you want to talk about how terrible your team did at the draft or how smart they are and how you are instantly a Super Bowl favorite, please shoot us an email, that's nextmanup@gmail.com. You can also check out our website, where our good buddy James just posted an amazing article sort of on the conversation of whether or not it's better to basically draft an entire defense or a quarterback, and how that affects your Super Bowl odds. So check that out at nextfanup.wordpress.com. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Fisher, who is going to be putting his feet up, eating some popcorn, and letting his hygiene go to Tahiti. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.